Well, welcome to DSAIA Live. It's our podcast. I'm Dina Tharp, and today my guest is Jay Wilkinson. Jay is the CEO of FireSpring, and for those who have been to a DSAIA conference in the last, what, I don't know, 7-10 years, you're very aware who Jay Wilkinson is. Thank you, Jay, for joining us today.
It is my pleasure. I'm excited to chat with you today.
Awesome. Well, one of the things is we were getting ready to kind of figure out what we wanted to talk about today was I always look at your bio, but I didn't realize you went to MIT, and I also didn't realize that you helped launch a magazine before you even left college.
I did. And it's funny because kids today don't even know what magazines are.
except for the one that goes to college on my dime, he gets a Game Informer. So,
yes.
After you sold that magazine and moved back to Nebraska, what made you decide to go back to the Midwest, plain?
At the time that I made the decision to do that, I had just had my first child, my son, and the more and more I pushed the stroller around Manhattan and New York City, the more I realized that I wanted him to have a childhood that where he knew what grass was and knew what it was like to hang in a tree, and I decided that I wanted to bring him back to Nebraska, so we sold the magazine and made our journey back home.
Awesome. So you are originally from Nebraska?
Yes. My family goes back 5 generations in a small town in central Nebraska, farm and ranch country. And my great-grandfather was the county commissioner of Lincoln County when Buffalo Bill started his Wild West Ranch in North Platte. And was a good friend of Buffalo Bill. So we go way back there in central Nebraska.
That's kind of an awesome story to be able to tell. That's incredible. That's incredible. So, and you've been to DSAIA and you've presented webinars for us, but you've been to the conference, you've done keynotes, you've done sessions, you've done workshops. What's your favorite thing to talk about when you go to conferences like that? What's the session that you love to do more than any other?
You know, I think it changes a little bit quarter to quarter, year to year, kind of depending on where I see the most interest and the most need. And right now, I think that the work that I've been doing, helping nonprofits develop really desirable work cultures, is the stuff that I really enjoy the most. I love really enlightening folks, even with 3 to 5 person organizations, the little things they can do with their culture to retain and attract really great people, not just employees, but volunteers and other people that want to be connected and be part of the organization and the movement they're in.
I'm glad you brought that up because in 2016, FireSpring was rated by Inc. magazine as one of the 50 best workplaces. And you know, culture is important no matter whether you're in, for-profit or nonprofit. For many of our organizations, it's almost like if you have 1 or 2 staff, or maybe you just have, most of your workforce is your working board. How do you help a nonprofit be able to, with a small staff like that, build something that's still professional, but yet has a very welcoming culture that you can retain those employees and keep your board also engaged?
Well, there are really no great mysteries left in this world, I think. And one of the things that it's just, I think more than anything, a reminder constantly that we need to be intentional. And the one thing that happens in most organizations is we get so passionate and so engaged with our mission, our purpose, whatever we exist for as a nonprofit, and we are set out to just make an impact on that mission. And sometimes those blinders we put on when we're marching forward, which are necessary for us to conquer a lot of adversity early on when we're building our nonprofits, sometimes those blinders prohibit us from seeing the collateral damage that we're doing to the people that are right there, you know, on our flank working alongside us. And so I think the most important thing is to open our eyes and be aware and be intentional about developing a culture where people, when they come there and they work and they're part of it, whether again they're volunteering or employed by that organization, when they go home at the end of the day, are they filled up with energy as a result of the work they did that day, or are they completely drained and feel like their job just sucked the life right out of them? There are so many people in the United States that go to work every day and come home feeling like the life force was sucked out of them that day, and it's shameful. It's really frustrating. When we have the alternative, we can just be mindful and intentional about creating the right types of recognition and the right way to train and empower people and give them the ability to make decisions without having our thumbs on them all the time. And lots of little things, it's just about being intentional of building a culture of empowerment and trust and inclusion. It's really what it's all about.
Yeah, exactly. So you have written a blog post for us, and it's all about the overhead myth, which I am a big fan of talking about it a lot. And I think that the more that we talk about it, just like anything else, we hopefully will dispel this myth and hope that it goes all the way up to foundations and our funders. But you talk a lot with nonprofits. What do you think that they spend the least amount of money on when it should be more, and that's due to this overhead dilemma?
Well, there are a lot of things that we tend to focus a little too little on in terms of where we're spending money. And I think the biggest issue with this, Dina, is the fact that we're so focused in the nonprofit sector on cost. And it's driven by this notion that we hear all the time. We've all heard the expression, we have to do more with less. We have to do more with less. And there are a lot of stats about what donors and people from the from outside the nonprofit community, what they feel nonprofits should spend on their overhead. And it's ridiculously low. And nonprofits are, on average, spending about 10% more than what the perception is that they should be spending. And the areas that I think are getting the least amount of love where there should be more are really three things. Number one on that list would be the tools that we're using to fundraise. Our donor database systems and the tools that we use allow us to be so much more impactful and leverage so much more if we have a good tool that makes it easy for us to maintain the records and stay in touch and connect with people. And to that point, the second thing on that list would be the cultivation efforts of our marketing. So we're talking about email marketing and social media marketing, direct mail, basically anything that allows us to stay connected with our constituents and foster the communication between us. And a lot of times we're trying to just find, okay, what's free, what's easy, rather than what's going to have the biggest ROI, the biggest return on investment. Again, going back to that point, that instead of focusing on how can we spend as little as possible because we have to do more with less, maybe we should be focusing on let's spend whatever amount we need to spend to have a positive return on investment. So if we spend a dollar, we want to get a dollar back. And the number one thing on that list are the things that we utilize that allow us to have a professional digital presence in 2017. It's so important that we have the ability to connect. We know that more than 80%, first of all, 80% of the people, it's actually 82% of the people who donate to a cause or a nonprofit online will go to that organization's website before they give. So we know that this is where they're vetting us. This is where they're checking us out. And this is where they're really gauging whether or not we're the real deal or not. And if our website is set up and built so that it feels like it's 2005 or 4, unless it's intentional, where we're trying to do a retro theme of some sort, it really creates doubt in the mind of the donor. And it will affect the amount that they'll give if they don't feel like your digital presence is properly conveying the professionalism of the mission. So I would say those three things: fundraising tools, marketing efforts, which would include everything from social media all the way to direct mail and the things in between, and then also your digital presence. Those are the things that most nonprofits are trying to just do it cheap rather than do it right on.
And I think there's a misconception that, you know, anyone, and you see the commercials, anyone can make a beautiful website and it takes 30 minutes and you're going to have this great website. And even though, yes, you can go out there, you can make a pretty website, whether it's functional and whether it's responsive to your donors and your members, your constituents, that's a whole different matter. And that's something that, you know, you can't do in 30 minutes and it takes a lot of thought. And I think that people kind of lose themselves in that because donors look at it and go, well, you should have a really nice website and it should be great. Well, that actually does come at a cost and it comes with a lot of work as well.
It does. And I think the biggest challenge that we see over and over, we've spent a lot of time in focus groups and researching in this area at FireSpring. And one of the things we've learned that on average, every 2 to 2.5 years, the average nonprofit in the United States starts over on their website. That's because we bring in, and for good reason, we bring in these amazing, awesome, wonderful people who are giving of their time and who have the best intentions in the world as our go-to geeks. Every nonprofit has a go-to geek. Sometimes it's an accidental techie, like the executive director who says, I'll take this on because I've got to figure this out. And sometimes it's a board member or the 14-year-old nephew of a board member or something like that. But we bring these people into our world. We lean heavily on them and get their help with our web strategy. And then a year, 2 years, 3 years go by and they get a new job or they have a child or a third child. And they graduate from middle school in the 14-year-old case and now homework is really serious all of a sudden. Something happens and this person has to move on. And so they turn and they say, okay, what do we do now? And they start over. And we see this time and time and time again. The average nonprofit has to start over every couple of years. And that's what keeps holding us down. We're not building things that are sustainable with our digital presence. And so that's the challenge that we need to overcome, is figure out how to put something in place, to your point, Dina, that allows us to have the tools, the functional tools that are not only possible, but in some cases, it makes it necessary for the constituents to connect with our organization using these tools like event registration and okay. The ability to not just make a donation, but to potentially make a recurring donation. You know, that it has a slightly more than 20% increase in donations if you have the overall over the course of a year, if you have the ability and you execute properly on the notion of having a recurring donation. You get $10 a month instead of $100 a year.
And that kind of goes back to, you know, working smarter, not harder, so that, you know, you set up a monthly giving program, that's all well and good, but you have to have the tools to do it in a way that you're not taking all of your staff's time or even your board treasurer's time or your accountant's time processing that monthly donation in a manual way. It can be people go, I want to do a monthly giving program, but I don't really, wow, that's a lot of work. And but not if you have the right tools. Exactly. Great. Well, and I kind of want to go into the future a little bit and talk about, I'm going to let you be a little bit of a prognosticator, Jay, and ask what's around the corner and what should nonprofit leaders be looking for in the future to help them, you know, grow their organization, increase their fundraising revenue, or just make their life easier when it comes to running their nonprofit. I always feel like you're right there on the cutting edge and you might have some really exciting things for us to look forward to.
A lot of the things that we're seeing in FireSpring are the tools that make it easier for us to manage and leverage our day and manage and leverage the relationships that we have that are the driving force behind our organizations in terms of what we're raising. And to that end, there are so many different, as there always are, every week, every month that goes by, there are another 5 to 500
apps or tools and things that we can use to help manage our day. And I'm a huge believer in keeping eyes and ears open on finding a better way. It's kind of the mantra that we have here at Firestream. In fact, we have banners that hang around our building that say, find a better way. And it's about that notion of continuous learning, continuous improvement, always iterating, always improving from one day to the next. And a big part of that in the nonprofit sector, especially with small nonprofit organizations, ones that have teams that are, that aren't hundreds and hundreds of people, is that there are tools and technology we can use. Some of them are simple and basic. I know, for example, that you use Doodle to do scheduling, right? And it's a simple tool that you can put in place that makes it, it probably on average would save somebody if they use a tool like that, right? There's another one called Calendly that is a low cost or a very effective tool that makes it possible for people to schedule time with you without you having to play the email dance that we all play when we go back and forth and back and forth by email. Mm-hmm. They just see the open spots, they connect with it, and if you change it, you can click a button and it will automatically send them a note back saying that Jay is no longer available at this time slot, and list the future time slot, so it'll even reschedule for you without having to spend time doing it. So I'm using that as an example of all of the little things that we can do to be more effective and to find a better way. So when you ask the question about what's the future, I think a big part of the future is going to be wider and broader adoption of simple tools that make it possible for us to leverage our work in a day. We already see so many things that are effective. I'm part of a couple nonprofit organizations that are using Slack as a communication tool to manage all of the volunteers.
Right.
So as a volunteer, I have a Slack account and I log in and I have access to all the different discussions and channels or committees or events or groups that I'm participating in helping that nonprofit with. And Slack is a great tool to, and it's free as a nonprofit organization, which most of these tools, not all of them, but most of them are free or substantially discounted for nonprofits, so that we can use these tools without paying an arm and a leg for them and without busting the overhead, which is what we're really focused on talking about today. So just a couple examples with Slack and Doodle, and there's so many more tools. I do an entire session on the tools that I'm a huge fan of and that I've seen evolving. I've done the session for years and it changes every year. I'm evolving and changing, so one tool out for another, and constantly focus on what is it that makes it possible for a person in the nonprofit sector to be effective with how they manage their day, how they manage the relationships with their constituents, their donors, their volunteers, and all the people in the universe. So to me, when you ask the question about the future, I think we're going to have more reliance on the various tools that we use to be more effective and powerful. We have to be selective with what tools we're using. The people that go out and just start using something new every week are going off the other end of that effectiveness scale. They're totally ineffective because that's all they're doing, is they're trying to learn how to use new stuff.
Right.
I have a rhythm that I recommend people utilize. I use a tool called Evernote. I know many people use Evernote. Mm-hmm. And I have a page in Evernote that makes it possible for me just to keep a list of the tools that I read about, I hear about. Maybe you're listening to this podcast today and you've heard me mention a couple things. I've mentioned Doodle. I've mentioned Evernote now. I've mentioned Slack. You can go look those up. What I do is when I hear about those, I drop a little line item in my spread on a page in Evernote, and I put a note about where I heard about it and then what I remember hearing about. So just real simple, takes me about 30 seconds to go do that. And then I go on about my day. And once a quarter, I reserve time on a weekend where I come in for 4 or 5 hours and I go down that list and I research them. I look up YouTube videos or I look up a discussion channel where they're talking about how they're using these tools and whether or not they work. And if I'm intrigued by one, I'll install it and I'll start using it. If I'm still using it at the end of the next quarter, then it's something that goes into my permanent, you know, arsenal, my, tool bag or my toolbox. If it's something that I've stopped using or I've flailed out, it's just not, then I file it away as a learning experience and I move on. But I never try to implement more than two in a quarter. I'm usually only one, or I'll pick one out of the list that is the most promising. But that allows me to keep iterating and keep growing and keep discovering new ways to be effective with my day. So that's just one part of the future. You know, there's so many things that are affecting it. And I think that we're going to see massive shifts and trends happen with the way that the people that are connected to our organizations are going to be connected. I'm not just talking about the tools now, the mechanism that they connect, but the way that people, that we see a massive trend towards micro-volunteering, for example, where people who are plugging into an organization and helping for a weekend or for a day, and we see fewer of the people that are saying, well, this is the organization I'm going to spend all of my time with, and they volunteer year-round for this one organization. We're seeing a gigantic shift towards people who want diversity of volunteer experience and connecting. So I think there's a way to embrace that. And so I think one of the things as leaders in the nonprofit sector, we need to be mindful of these shifts in preferences and try to come up with ways for us to draw in people who want to connect with our organization without the expectation of disappointment if they're not attending the next event, you know, just to really embrace them and bring them in maybe once a year instead of every other weekend all year long.
Right.
Is a shift in mindset for a lot of people.
So and I think your autism there, the micro volunteering, and also, you know, in nonprofits, we seem to be so tied to, you know, standing committees. And a lot of times, really these we have projects and they can be split up into what we call work groups or task forces. And, you know, there's a shelf life on that. You know, there's an end date so that, once that project is completed, or we want you to work on this until September, until, you know, then we'll disband. And if you want to stay and come back in the next year, that's great. And if you don't, but for a lot of these things in our committees that a normal committee would work on, and it's just another thing that rolls around, it can be put into a work group as a project. And then that, and you're more likely to get people to come in if they know that, hey, I'm not signing on for the rest of my life. I'm only signing on until this project is complete and the expected deadline is this date. I think they're more willing to give you a little bit of more in-depth time that way as well, if you need something more than just one thing for them to do.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that.
Well, great, Jay. I'm so happy that we got a chance to get you to sit down with us and talk to us today on the podcast. We look forward to seeing more of your webinars and hearing more about the great things that FireSpring is doing. And just thank you so much for joining us.
You are so welcome. Thank you for the great work that you did as well.
And I have to, I can't let you off without saying, of course, you know, we, FireSpring is a partner of DSAIA. And so the website and more, those kind of tools are all available at a very discounted price. So if you're interested in that, you can contact DSAIA and we'll get you in touch with FireSpring and get you some more information on that. But we really appreciate the partnership. It's been going on for quite a few years and we're excited to see it not only continue, but expand.
Likewise, thank you so much for inviting me to join you today. I really enjoyed it.